Hi, everybody. We are recording today's episode of Adapting on April 25th, 2022, and it is the week of Yom HaShoah VeGvura, of Holocaust and Heroism Remembrance Day. Today's episode with Rabbi Potok looks at one of the most challenging, or what I believe to be one of the most challenging aspects of Jewish education today, and that is how to educate about the Holocaust in today's world. Rabbi Potok's really interesting perspective is that he educates both for Jewish and for non-Jewish audiences, and what makes this episode really timely in so many ways is not only that we're releasing it on the week of Yom HaShoah, but I'm really feeling, perhaps more so than ever, that we as Jewish educators are at the last moment in history when we have direct connections with Holocaust survivors. And I'm really beginning to ask myself, and I also ask our guest, what extra responsibility, or maybe even burden, that places upon all of our shoulders. I'm sure you'll appreciate Rabbi Potok's insight into these and many other challenging issues related to Holocaust education today.
This is Adapting, the Future of Jewish Education, a podcast from the Jewish Education Project, where we explore the big questions, challenges, and successes that define Jewish education. I'm David Breifman.
So thank you all for joining us for today's conversation. I believe it's one of the more important, or one of even the most important ones in Jewish education today, because it is so challenging for many of us. Talking about the Holocaust, talking about the Shoah, is not an easy job for any of us. Today's guest, Rabbi Yehuda Potok, will help us think about ways we educate about the Holocaust. Rabbi Potok is the director of the Jewish Education Program at Facing History and Ourselves, and before joining Facing History, he worked at Jewish day schools, camps, and Hebrew high schools throughout the United States. It's my absolute pleasure to welcome Rabbi Potok onto today's show. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you, David. Good to be here.
So I'd love you to start off by telling our audience how it is that you became a Holocaust educator. I imagine that it's not one of the first things you imagined coming out of school, that you wanted to become an educator talking about the Holocaust, but what's a bit about your journey that's of interest to all of us here?
So if I look back, there are probably two particular moments in my life that left a deep imprint. The first was as a child hearing the story about when my grandfather received a letter from Europe letting him know that everyone in his family and in my grandmother's family who had remained in Europe during the Shoah had been killed during the Shoah. It was one of the few times that his children ever saw him cry. The second was when a vociferously anti-Semitic candidate was running for president, and that was the day that my parents took us for passports. They let us know that no matter how good Jews have it in a particular locale, they made sure that we knew from our history, there's never a place where we're truly safe. However, having said all that, I don't actually see myself as a Holocaust educator. Rather, I see myself as an educator whose goal it is to help students become active, engaged, and responsible members within their communities. In my current context, I do this by using historical case studies to teach students how to view their world with a critical eye, learn from their past, and apply these lessons to their lives today as they become civically engaged.
So let's talk a bit about the work that you're doing today, because right now you're working for an organization that wasn't set up initially to talk to or educate Jewish students, but really talking to the general population about the Holocaust and its messages for society. So I want to explore with you a bit about what it means to be someone who educates about the Holocaust for Jewish and non-Jewish audiences in 2022. So can you talk to us a bit about what those similarities and differences might be?
Well, I think within the Jewish context, it's something more personal because it's part of our history. Right? This is something that our own people experienced and went through. Whereas when you're looking to the greater world for non-Jewish population, it's a broader message. It's not personal, but you're trying to make it personal in a way where they can take the message and learn the human behavior behind how the Holocaust happened in order to be able to gain a lesson from it and to be able to fight hatred and bigotry.
So I think that raises one of the biggest challenges for educators about the Holocaust, and that is it a particular event which happened to the Jewish people, and should we be focusing mainly or only on the Jewish suffering of the Shoah? Or should we be taking the universal out of this disastrous event, this calamity, this enormous tragedy for humankind, and try and extrapolate that to other tragedies in the world today? So how do you talk about this difference, dichotomy, spectrum, I'm reluctant to call it either of those terms, between universalism and particularism of the Shoah?
Yeah, the universal in particular is something we talk about all the time in Facing History, and it's a difficult balance to play. When we think about the Holocaust within a Jewish context, there is the particular. Again, there's the personal of parents, grandparents who either second, third generation or grandparents potentially even experienced the Holocaust themselves. So it's a much more personal story. But it's not the only story within Jewish history. And I think that that's an important piece to understand the broader scope of Jewish history, of understanding other anti-Semitic experiences that the Jews have had and being part of the Jewish story, but also thinking about the joys and traditions the Jewish population has been able to enjoy. Within the larger world, though, I think that when we think of the Holocaust, especially in today's day and age, where there is so much use of Holocaust imagery and symbolism, often misappropriating it or using it in ways that that can be insulting to the survivors and their memory, we have to be very careful about understanding that though there are particulars to the Holocaust, it's not the particulars that we're so focused on, but rather the universal message of trying to understand what lessons we can learn from how the Holocaust happened, how human behavior could have gotten to the point where such a horrible event in history could have occurred, and what we extrapolate from that and how we then work to make sure that nothing like that ever happens again in our world.
This expression, never again, or that it can never happen again, I'm wondering what your perspective is on that whole concept. Like, do you actually believe that the Holocaust could never happen again? Or what message do you take from that slogan or that phrase?
It's a challenging phrase. I think that never again is much easier to say than it is to follow through on. It's really hard to be an upstander instead of a bystander. It's really difficult to use one's voice and speak truth to power or to be counterculture when you're with your peer group and they're saying something or doing something that you feel strongly that you disagree with. This is what we need to be preparing our children for, though. And this is what Facing History really does, to become secure in their own identities and to find their own voices so that when, not if, but when the time comes, they will have the confidence and the tools they need to speak up and act. As you asked, like, could it happen again? I think it absolutely could. And I actually think that it happens, unfortunately, around the world as we speak. It's happening in different ways. Again, the universal versus the particular. Not in the same way as the Holocaust, but this hatred and bigotry has not left our world and something that we have to constantly be prepared to fight.
So talk a bit about this upstander, bystander piece, because I know it's central to the philosophy and pedagogy of Facing History, but I want to better understand, A, how you get that message from the Shoah, from the Holocaust, and B, how you believe it could or should be applied for young people today.
Well, we focus a lot on human behavior when we talk about the Holocaust, and there's the perpetrators, right? But at the same time, on the side of the perpetrators is also bystanders, people who stood by and watched as things happened. And there are many reasons why somebody might be a bystander. It could be because they agree and just let things happen as they do. But it could also be because they're terrified. I mean, they could be very scared about what could happen if they speak up or if they react in a way that it's not agreed upon by the majority. So it's not, as I said, it's not so simple to be an upstander. An upstander being somebody who really speaks up and speaks out against what's going on. And I think that the important message that Facing History tries to convey is that there are different ways to be an upstander. You don't have to be somebody who necessarily says something in the middle of your friends are saying something that you disagree with, or that it's racist or it's anti-Semitic, whatever it might be, and that you speak out against it in that moment. It could be that you talk to that one person who made the comment afterwards. Like, there are different levels of comfort, and we have to understand that not everybody is going to be at the same place with that comfort level of being able to speak up and speak out against those kinds of comments. So everybody will find a different place in being an upstander. But the important part is to find your voice and to be able to find a way to be an upstander and not just step back and watch things happen as they go by you.
You mentioned this before, and I'm sort of curious as to whether young people actually ask this question, particularly growing up in America, the place of freedom and democracy. Do they ever ask you that question? Like, could it actually happen here? And when they ask that question, like, what are you responding to them?
So I think as a question, it goes in waves. Some of it depends on what's happening in the United States. I think these days, with a lot of the anti-Semitic events that are going on in the United States right now, that question has been coming up more. But my response is, any of these things could happen anywhere. They could happen anywhere, anytime. We don't know. And our goal is, and our role in this is to fight it, to make sure that things that happen to lead up to past tragedies aren't able to happen again. That's why I said before, it's not about if, it's about when. These things will continue to happen in our world. And the question is, what can we do? What role do we play to make sure that we can try to stop it, or at least try to mitigate the results of these kinds of behaviors, bigotry and hatred?
So I'm wondering what sort of responsibility, maybe even burden, that you feel today, perhaps more than in any other time in recent history. And I asked this question recently. I just read an article about March of the Living, and they spoke about March of the Living after not having trips for the last 2 years, of taking young people to Poland and then on to Israel, is going to have 8 Holocaust survivors go on the trip this year. Last year it was 70, and next year is probably going to be 0. That there just simply will not be any Holocaust survivors alive, healthy enough to travel to Poland. And it was really a stark reminder for me that this is really the last generation to come into direct contact with Holocaust survivors. And on one hand, that could be seen as incredibly inspiring, I imagine, for a young person. Like, let me go and talk to so many people so I can hear what they have to say. On the other hand, there's something quite tragic and also overbearing about that responsibility. And I'm wondering how you feel about that whole balance for yourself.
So personally, I find it challenging to think that this is going to be the last generation that really has the encounter with those survivors. I myself have met a number of them, and I've seen the impact that those encounters can have upon our youth. You know, I hope that the young kids today really understand and appreciate the privilege that they have being able to learn firsthand from those Holocaust survivors. But it's not just about the stories of survival that's so important. It's the stories that came before the Holocaust and came after the Holocaust. When I have my students learning from Holocaust survivors, it's important for them to understand the context of their whole life, not just simply the fact that they survived. I think that learning from our elders is really such an important aspect within our Jewish tradition, bridging the link between one generation and the next. It's a problem when a generation somehow sees itself disconnected from the past without an understanding or appreciation of where they come from. In fact, I remember a quote from the Hasidic founder, Rabbi Yisrael Baal Shem Tov, who once said that forgetfulness leads to exile. Memory is the key to redemption. Our Jewish youth have to understand, they have to have a link to their past in order to build a future for our people.
I'm really struck by your references, and now is almost where you started, of older generations, of family, of personal connections to the Holocaust. And in myself, in my own family, it's extremely important part of my own upbringing and my own historical and genealogy. My grandmother, Holocaust survivor, passed away last year, so it's extremely personal for me as well. And I wonder how many of us who are involved in this Jewish education business have family in some way as a real motivator, as a real inspiration for us getting involved in Jewish education. So maybe you could be a bit explicit about your family and what sort of role they had in helping to shape you to becoming an educator, a Jewish educator, an educator of the Holocaust.
So there's no question that my family has been an integral part of who I've become. For a long time, I actually resisted it. You know, my father was a pulpit rabbi, and I was like, I never wanted to go into the rabbinate. But both my parents were Jewish educators. And growing up, I was surrounded by educators. As I said, my parents were both educators. My aunts and uncles were involved in Jewish education. Both of my sisters at some point in their lives went on to be in Jewish education for a little bit. I have vivid memories of being around my uncle's table with all the different scholars who, you know, came through that house and the conversations that happened in that home. It was really formative for me. So my uncle Chaim Potok wrote many novels, many of which were Jewishly themed. The Chosen being, I think, the most famous of them, and really focuses on just growing up in America as a Jew, on the tensions that exist between multiple identities and sort of the struggle that exists in there. My family and his family were always very close. We were the New York Potoks and they were the Philly Potoks. And, you know, his kids and our kids, like, we were always in each other's houses and just very close with each other. And my dad was the younger brother. So it was always that older brother, younger brother kidding around dynamic that would go on as well around the table. It was just very close. And I think that every time somebody asks me, like, are you related to, like, I don't see it as like the, you know, the famedom of my uncle, because he was my uncle. Like, I was very close with him. And my uncle's books for me were also family history. I know they're not factual books, but there's many pieces within those books that really speak to family history. And in fact, the story that I mentioned earlier about my grandfather receiving that letter shows up in The Chosen. And so that's sort of like, as I read those books and I read them to my kids now, and they're now learning the family history, that's a piece of our family. And it was just another family member. I didn't see that fame quite in the same way. So I breathed education in my home. And yet when I was younger, I never saw myself going into education, right? I didn't want to necessarily go into it myself. But as I got older, I realized how privileged I was to witness the incredible impact that educators can have on students' lives, and that role modeling that can be so deeply impactful upon another human being. And this is what made me switch gears to go into the family business instead of getting a job in computer science, which is what I was studying in college.
So obviously, maybe not obviously, but I've read The Chosen, My Name is Asher Lev, other works by your uncle. But when I was doing my research about experiential Jewish education, I came across what became one of the really informative pamphlets, or it was actually created for a museum piece at the Jewish Museum in Philadelphia about Jewish camping. And he wrote a foreword to this booklet about Jewish camping, which was absolutely outstanding as a piece of literature, but also his deep connection to Jewish summer camp, which I found just a really visceral and moving piece to write, and I referred to it in my own research and dissertation. But camp has also become a really important part of your biography, and I want to talk a bit about the Holocaust and summer camp. Now, it might not seem like these two things go together, but they often do, and I want to hear your thoughts about making or filling one of the happiest places in the Jewish world with discussions about the Holocaust. What does that mean, and how does it play itself out?
You know, summer camps for him were an essential part of his own development growing up, and certainly has been a significant part of my own development in becoming a Jewish educator. summer camps are a magical place. Like, they're this incredible experience for kids where they're at that stage in life where they're figuring out their own identity. They're testing boundaries in a safe and secure environment amongst their peers. And because of this, experiential education opportunities are so important to help campers to be challenged by difficult topics and ethical dilemmas. At Facing History, we have what we call the pedagogic triangle, which speaks to an ideal learning environment where students are being engaged through intellectual rigor, emotional engagement, and ethical reflection. Camp environment is ideal for exploring these three areas of the head, the heart, and the conscience. And I think when we talk about Holocaust education, you know, whether it's an experience on Tisha B'Av or whether it might be a class during the day that kid might have in Yavne, we called it Kita, those are moments where kids can be themselves and open up in ways that they don't always get to do in schools. And it's really just incredibly impactful for peer-to-peer engagement, where they can interact with each other and really try to figure out who they are and what they believe and how they feel and what place they want to play in the world.
Can you be a bit explicit about this connection between Tisha B'Av at summer camp and the Holocaust? It's interesting that, you know, I come from Australia where Tisha B'Av happens in the middle of the academic year, so it was another holiday. But Tisha B'Av is the only real Jewish holiday which take place right in the middle of summer. So summer camp is really the venue where a large number of Jewish kids only experience Tisha B'Av at summer camp. And so many summer camps connect Tisha B'Av to the Holocaust. And I'm wondering, how does that make you feel as an educator? What do you see? Are the parallels right? Are they sometimes go askew? Like, how do you see this juxtaposition of these 2 days?
So I would challenge camps not to only associate Tisha B'Av with the Holocaust. I think that the Holocaust, as I mentioned earlier, is one of many tragedies that have befallen the Jewish people. And I think it's that broader picture of Jewish history, which is so important for our kids to understand. And there have been these terrible times in Jewish history, but there's also been these joyful times. And I think one of the beautiful things about Judaism is that it plays a very delicate balance and a very intentional balance between making sure that there's a lot of joy in our tradition and that there are moments where we also have to remember the tragedy. And a day like Tisha B'Av in camp, where you can really deeply delve into the tragedies of Jewish history, the Holocaust and many other moments in Jewish history, and the way that those experiences happen through artistic expressions, through films that kids might watch, through conversations that the campers will have with each other, that day is so much opportunity for an emotional engagement, for ethical reflection, as I mentioned before, just to really engage in these topics where they would not have that kind of experience or not have those opportunities in other parts of their lives. You know, it's funny you said that Tisha B'Av, it's the kind of thing where if you don't go to camp, you don't have that same experience, right? The kids don't understand really fully what Tisha B'Av is. Like, I remember even as an adult, I'd find a camp to go to for Eicha just so that I could have the camp experience because it was so much more powerful than what you might normally have in a regular synagogue environment. There's something to be said about peers that you've lived with for a month or two and being able to just experience that depth of emotion, that pain together in such a powerful way.
So I've seen some really amazing, wonderful, tremendous examples of Holocaust education. Between you, me, and the audience, I've also seen some really bad Holocaust educational experiences, and they often take place in these more experiential, informal environments. And it's the word experiential which I want to explore with you when it comes to the Holocaust. Experiential in education often means allowing people to go through an experience for themselves to reach their own conclusions and have their own emotions or reactions to that experience. But when you're talking about experiential education when it comes to the Holocaust, that's clearly not what you're referring to. So I want to better understand, when you talk about experiential education and the Holocaust, what are you talking about and what are you bringing to this discussion which can enhance our understanding of both Holocaust education but also experiential education as well?
So it's interesting you bring this up, because a number of decades ago, you had, you know, school education and then you had camp education, never the twain shall meet. And I think over the years, we've realized as educators that the idea of experiential education is not something that stands alone in a camp environment, but really it's the bridge between the intellectual and that emotional that's so important, right? And so you have to have that bridge between those two things. If you have just experiential, where kids are kind of like feeling it and it's just focused on the emotional and you're just kind of like going through some kind of powerful experience, but there's nothing to ground it in intellectual, there's nothing to ground it in the mind, it loses the power. And at the same time, I think schools have learned that if they only focus on the intellectual and they only focus on the facts and the names and the histories of, and they don't have any emotional piece to it, that they also lose out. And I think that really it's the connection between those two parts that makes it so much more powerful and last longer, and helps a camper or a student understand that it's not about just how I feel. It's about the facts on the ground. It's not just about the facts on the ground. It's also about how it makes me feel and what I do with those emotions.
So I don't know any Jewish educator of our generation here on a broad sweep of our generation who hasn't watched The Wave or read the book The Wave, if not the original, then the newer version. And The Wave is an example of some sort of experiential education gone wrong in many, many ways. And I think the power dynamics involved in these educational experiences with trying to make some people feel inferior or secondary, and then trying to have that power juxtaposition is a real abuse of Holocaust education in so many ways. But it's a dynamic that we have seen play itself out in the Jewish world as well over time. As educators, I think with all of the right intentions, are desperately trying to convey the message or what it might have felt like, or just a little bit like, to be under persecution. And I'm wondering, at an extreme, are these things that you've also seen or heard about and thought about as well?
Yeah. So first of all, I think that you have to be really careful. And as you said, there's the power dynamic, and you have to be very careful as an educator of the power that you hold and how you wield that power. You're not the same plane as the students are, and you have to be careful of their emotions. You have to be careful of like how they're experiencing what it is that you're doing. The other piece, which I would also mention, is that how we think we're delivering something is not necessarily how the students themselves are receiving it. And an educator always has to be thinking about what's going on inside the students who are in front of them. And not every class will be the same, and not every student within a class will be the same. And you have to really be careful in thinking about who's in front of you, who the audience is when you're delivering these experiences or the lessons that you might be delivering. One class might react to a particular lesson in a very positive way, while another one might take it completely wrong and even get the wrong message out of what you were trying to express, or take the message that you were trying to express and make lighthearted almost of like using it in a way that it should never have been used. So, you know, as an educator, you always have to be thinking about, you know, who you're teaching and how you're teaching those lessons.
So Yehuda, it's 2022. This episode is going to be released on Holocaust Remembrance Day, Yom HaShoah. And it's hard, and I think you alluded to it before, not to think about what's taking place in some parts of the world, specifically in Ukraine and the region there today. And I'm wondering, as an educator about the Holocaust, are you making direct parallels to what's taking place in Ukraine? Are you trying to separate these events? Or how are you talking to students about what's taking place in Ukraine in light of your work as an educator of the Holocaust?
So I think it goes back to the universal in particular. You have to be careful not to look at particulars and try to say like, oh, it's the same thing as the Holocaust, right? The history is happening all over again. That's really not the point of what Holocaust education is about. However, the steps that enabled the Holocaust to happen and what occurred as a result of those steps that got them there, those are definitely things we have to be paying attention to, and mistakes that have been made in the past to try to not make those same mistakes in the future. So things like the refugee problem that's happening now because of the war in Ukraine, how do we respond to that? How do we step up and help the people who are in need? The tools that we're trying to provide to our students, the thoughts that we're trying to help our students engage in, the thinking, the critical thinking that we're trying to help our students engage in, that's really what we want them to walk away with, so that our students can have a critical eye and can have an emotional attachment to things that are going on in the world, and to find a way in so that they don't become bystanders, that they can find their voice in how they want to engage it, whether it's addressing the refugee issue, whether it's sending, I know that, you know, so many of the Jewish schools were sending over Pesach kits to be able to help Jews celebrate Passover. There were many organizations that were sending things to people in Ukraine in general, not just Jewish schools were sending things in general to the communities in Ukraine, just to help people on the ground. There are many ways, I think, to engage in it. I think the biggest issue would be is not to stand on the sidelines, not to be the bystander, not to just sit and watch it happen as it goes by, but to learn from the lesson, but not to make a direct connect that it's all the same thing, but to find the mistakes that have been made and to try to find ways to correct those.
So I also want to ask the question in reverse, and maybe this is even a bit more sensitive, is can we use the events that are taking place in Ukraine to talk about the Holocaust? So for example, one of the things that I heard recently was talking about Zelensky as Mordechai Anilevich, as the fighters in the Warsaw Ghetto and the uprising and the resistance there. And I'm wondering if the reverse can also be true. And do you think that we could be using events of today to actually talk more about the Holocaust?
Look, I think as we continue to move forward, we continue to see and have insight into the way the world works, into the way human behavior responds to things. And I certainly think that there are things that we can learn. You know, we can constantly learn from new ideas in psychology or new ideas in economics, or like how and why things could have happened the way that they did in the Holocaust. But I would caution against, you know, making assumptions around particulars as opposed to thinking about things more in the universal. And just it's a challenge to be careful not to make assumptions about those things. But we're always gaining new insights from the new things that we learn about the way the mind works, the way human behavior works.
So it's Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day. How should we be remembering or commemorating the Holocaust in the future? I mean, unlike other Jewish holidays or commemorations, it's not taking place in the synagogue. It's not necessarily taking place at the family Seder or lighting of the Hanukkah in someone's home. How do you think we should be remembering the Holocaust? And how do you think this will change in an era without survivors being amongst us? What do you think we should be doing? And how should we be remembering this tragic event?
I think part of it goes to the idea of memory. And that memory is not just something of remembering a story of the past, but a living memory, something that we're conveying to the future, something that we're keeping alive, both in terms of the lives that perished in the Holocaust, as well as the people who survived, and keeping those stories alive. I think that the living memory is how we keep this at the forefront of how we think and how we respond to the world around us. So it's not necessarily how the Holocaust is being taught per se, but it's about that memory of those incidents, the memory of what happened, being a living reminder for us how we engage our world, how we react to the things that are going on in our world.
You're reminding me now, and I know Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks wasn't the first to make this distinction. Others have done it as well, but this distinction between history and memory, I think, is really, really critical here, that when you're teaching about the Holocaust, you could just teach it as history. And I think what you're suggesting is that if you approach it as if you're teaching memory, that it's something very, very different and will have a different resonance among students if you do it in that light.
Very much so. We just came out of the holiday of Passover, where memory is a huge component. And the memory of Passover is not the memory of sitting around talking about stories. It's a memory of actually feeling like we lived through it ourselves. It's a living memory.
So I know that I've mentioned March of the Living already, but I want to talk to you a bit about this concept of educational tourism or pilgrimage or journeys that many young people are making to, particularly in this case, to Europe, often to visit sites of the death camps and concentration camps of Europe. And I know, as someone who's been a staff member on these trips, how do you think about and talk about these types of journeys for our young people today?
These trips are incredibly impactful, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. As you mentioned, I led some of these trips to Poland, Lithuania. I actually took a trip to Spain with Jewish teens. But when I ran these trips, the trips focused not only on the demise of Jewish communities in these places. Rather, a significant goal of these trips was to focus on the thousands of years of Jewish life and vibrancy that existed in these places before the destruction of the Jewish communities. As a people, we need to remember to focus on the joy, the links in the chain, the rituals, the traditions that have sustained the Jewish people throughout the ages. So important for teenagers to understand where they came from.
And I'm assuming that often by seeing the vibrancy of Jewish life, whether it was in Spain or in Europe before the war, before the Inquisition, they actually appreciate or understand the significance of the destruction in a very different light as well. That it's not just lives that were being lost, but actually Jewish civilization was actually being challenged as well.
Very much so. And it also puts their own teenage lives in perspective of living in the United States, which is an incredible place to grow up for American Jewish kids, and realize that it's not so different from what was there.
Over the last couple of years, when I've been running these adapting podcasts, I've said to many of my guests, like, I know times are tough. I know the pandemic is really wearing down on all of us. But when we come on to this episode, I need educators to be filled with optimism. And I'm wondering, like, when you're teaching about the Holocaust so many times over and over again, like, are you optimistic or pessimistic? Like, how do you feel when you're talking about these big events when you're approaching Jewish education? And can the Holocaust be seen as a moment of educational optimism?
I'm incredibly optimistic, because at the same time as you had the destruction in so many ways of the Jewish people in Europe, you did have people who stood up. You do have individuals who did the right thing and stood up for Jews, even at the cost of their own life. You're always going to have people who are going to stand up for what's good and what's right. And that's what we have to have more of in this world. And that's really what we're teaching about when we teach about the Holocaust. We're teaching our students how to be that good and right person in the world.
So I know we've spoken a bit about your influences in your life already, but I want to give you the opportunity to pay tribute to an educator in your life who's made an impact on you, someone who you'd like to mention and honor as someone who's contributed to making you who you are today.
So as I mentioned earlier, my parents had a tremendous impact on my life as role models of Jewish educators. But there's another person to whom I owe a tremendous debt of gratitude, and that's Debbie Sussman, past director of Camp Yavne. She was a true mentor to me. She showed me what a leader with vision could accomplish, and she's always been a passionate and intentional educator who taught me that every moment in Jewish education is an opportunity to ignite a beautiful spark within every child.
Rabbi Potok, thank you so much for today's conversation. It has really been a window into a really challenging topic that I know many Jewish educators are confronting all the time, and specifically around the time of Yom HaShoah. And I really think that some of the messages you've shared with us are particularly powerful and meaningful. So thank you very much for everything that you've contributed to today's episode.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode was produced by Dina Nussenbaum and Gabriel Weinstein. The show's executive producers are myself, Karen Cummins, and Nessa Lieben. Our show is engineered and edited by Nathan J. Vaughan of NJV Media. If you enjoyed today's adapting, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, or even better still, share it with a friend. To learn more about the Jewish Education Project, you can visit our website at jewishedproject.org. And as always, I want to mention that we are a proud partner of UJA Federation of New York that makes all of our work possible. Thanks everyone for listening today. Okay.